You're tuned into the all-new Freedom 106.5. 106.5.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is Richard Solomon on the Inside Hub. Good evening to you. This song that we are leading off with this evening is probably one of the best descriptions of my nation, Trinidad and Tobago, I've ever come across. I have to give these guys massive kudos for singing our reality. And this is not new, our griots and our storytellers, our bantans have been singing our stories. Today, I want to talk to you about, and I want us to talk together. I am not doing all the talking at all, but I want us to talk together about this issue of competitiveness at the national level. And we're going to ask you eventually to come in and invite your calls at 625-2257. 627-3223, and then on WhatsApp 306-1065. But we want to talk about competitiveness. Are we a competitive nation? Let's start with this. So a nation's competitiveness equals its productivity, pretty much. And so when we speak competitiveness, the question we're asking is, how productive are we? You know, how well are we doing as a nation in terms of our productivity? Now, what we know is that productivity is driven at three levels. First of all, natural endowment. So those are your natural resources, your climate, your location. And we know Trinidad and Tobago has that in spades. I remember hearing some years ago, I believe it was a UK commissioner or somebody like that saying, even the weather is afraid of us. Yeah? We say God is a trini, right? But we know that we're so close to the South American mainland that, you know, we have excellent weather. All right, yes, some people will say, oh, we have floods and so on, but nothing like some of our Caribbean neighbors. So natural endowments include things like location, weather, climate in general, and natural resources. One of the reasons that Trinidad and Tobago has done as well as it has is because we are blessed with copious natural resources. Plenty, plenty gas and oil over the years. We've had several oil booms. And we've been powering ships and these kinds of things in the Second World War, I believe, was the First World War. One of those world wars. We supplied the most amount of oil or petroleum, whatever derivative it is, to power these ships. So that's one. Natural resources, we have a lot of that. Secondly, is the macroeconomic environment. And what is that? That has to do with the policies we set at a national level, rule of law, healthcare, education, human development, political systems, proper functioning government, institutional strength. So that's the second level. We're talking about competitiveness here. And we're saying that competitiveness equals productivity, and productivity is driven at three levels. One, natural endowments. Two, we're talking about the macro environment. So that's how well our systems work, our government works, rule of law, healthcare, and so on. And immediately, we know we're a little weak there. As a nation, we know we're a little bit weak there. And then thirdly is the micro environment. So this has to do with firms and organizations and how productive they are, and then how productive our people are, micro policies and so on. How productive are we at the organizational, the company level, and then the individual level? So we have three levels to talk about. Now, we, as the individuals who live in this nation, we don't get to decide what our natural endowments are, right? It's not for us to decide as a nation or as individuals what our natural endowments are. We just meet them there. Where we are located is where we are located. One, the climate we have is the climate we have. Two, what's under the ground is what's under the ground. Three, however, the next two levels we could do something about. The macro policies, we create those and we maintain those. The performance, that's on us. Yeah? So if your nation wants to be competitive, actually as competitive as possible, what we want to do is to exploit all of these three levels. Now, Trinidad and Tobago, the last time the World Economic Forum measured this, we sat at the 79th place of 141 nations. So we're kind of in the middle of the pack in terms of productivity and competitiveness. Now, you could say, well, 79 is so bad, we're not down in the 100 and something levels. Yeah, but that's like me saying, well, I'm a strong runner because I put maybe some of these same 70-year-olds that Carrie V was talking about, and I run a little faster than them because I'm not quite there yet. Yeah, I'm really not that fast. And so that's one of the things that we have to be mindful of as a nation. Yeah, our productivity is one of our challenges. And so let us focus in on what we have been able to do well for ourselves and where we have struggled. And we're going to invite you to come into the conversation in a short while, 625-2257, 627-3223, and then on WhatsApp, 306-1065. I should say 1065. That reads better, right? So we have done well. How? Why? Well, I want to submit the reason we have done reasonably well as a nation, and if you compare us to many of our neighbors, we have done better in many instances, is because we have these natural endowments. And we've had people and leaders and so on over the years in the life of our nation that have exploited these natural endowments so that money has flowed into the nation. Now, what we have done with it has nothing to do with the natural endowments themselves. What we've done with it has everything to do with our own macro and micro policies and systems. And this is where we are falling apart. There has been an exodus of multinational corporations over the last multiple years. And of course, in the last couple of years, we've seen many go. So names include the Tringen, the Mittal Steel, Unilever. I mean, Unilever's products are still here, obviously, but they don't make them here anymore, right? We've seen the exodus of the Johnson & Johnson and Kimberly-Clark and many of these kinds of organizations. They've left the nation, and for those who have remained, many of them are no longer manufacturing their products here. But we have natural resources. Why have so many companies up and left Trinidad and Tobago? That's something we should really consider. Now, one of the reasons that people bring companies to a nation is because you've got advantageous positions. Nobody starts a business to lose money, right? So you've got an advantageous position, rule of law, stable political transition, you've got good ports and harbors, you have cheap energy. And that has been, I want to submit, that has been one of our saving graces. Many of these nations that have left Trinidad and Tobago have said very clearly a major reason that they have left is because of low productivity in the labor force. Now, if you go back to the same report, the World Economic Report, that speaks to national competitiveness, the top three problems for doing business in Trinidad are as follows: bureaucracy, corruption, and poor work ethic in the labor force. Stay with me. For what companies pay, and some people get upset with me, but you have to compare apples to apples. What you will find is that they are able to produce many of these same products in other places, Mexico, Dominican Republic, which is just not too far away from here, for cheaper, and import it into Trinidad and Tobago and still do better. And so what I'm saying to us is that we have been tripping up in terms of our own competitiveness. Yeah? We have been tripping up. And that's something to take into consideration. Now, we just got thrown a curveball recently. I don't know how many of you are aware that the NGC is saying that they are likely to increase, and these are their words, not mine, the price of natural gas by 70%, and the news report said across the board. Now, let's understand what's going on. We are saying that many of the multinational corporations that have left Trinidad and Tobago, they've left because of low productivity. One of the reasons they came was because we had cheap energy. We built this entire economy on cheap energy. Like it or not, that's the reality. And now, suddenly as a nation, here's what we're going to do. We are going to increase, we're going to interfere and play around with, in my view, the number one thing that has kept us here. Now, I don't know what across the board means in terms of NGC, because we have all kinds of gas products in Trinidad, some of which we consume at the domestic level, others we don't, and so on. But here's what I know. You speak to any one of these manufacturing companies, and they'll tell you they need lots of gas in order to do what they do. As a matter of fact, if you look at the Point Lisas Industrial Estate, there are many plants down there that have been mothballed. Why? They've shut them down, or they've scaled down their operations because they can only get 50, 60% of the gas they need to run the plant. Can you imagine that? Think about what I've just said. You have a plant that is built with billions of dollars, and you have to now scale down its operation. In some cases, close it down because you can't get gas to run it. But that's why you came to Trinidad in the first place, and that's part of our reality. So here's what I am saying is going to happen. I am saying that our competitiveness is going to get worse because our productivity is going to get worse. Because we as a people, we don't want to work too hard. That's not me. Don't get upset with me. That's the data. The data says we don't want to work too hard. Why? Well, we've always had money. That's our reality. And say, all right, well, we don't want to work so hard, but we have gas and oil, so we're going to make it. Well, the molecules are deeper in the ground. Well, the molecules that we are able to find, what we're doing now is we're making it more expensive. And here's what I predict. More companies are going to look at this reality and say, you know what, this don't make sense for me. They're going to say the cost of doing business in Trinidad and Tobago is too hard. It's too high, sorry. It's just too hard to do business here. And again, don't come for me, you know. Don't come for me. It's just too hard to do business here. So cost of doing business is high. Labor productivity is not so good. And I'll tell you, let me just take a little stab here. Some of our labor leaders have encouraged this nonsense. I remember someone saying to some organization a few years ago, take your oil rig and go. And so what did the company do? They took their oil rig and left. Because Trinidad and Tobago is not so special. Yeah, we have Carnival and we have Bacon Shark and we have Doubles and all that, but that don't make us special. Our reality is that anything that we make here can be manufactured in all kinds of places. So I'm saying that our competitiveness continues to fall. And now, the one-trick pony, because this is what we are, I am facing the reality of what my nation is, Trinidad and Tobago. We have built this economy on gas and oil. And now, the oil prices aren't that hot. We've been a gas economy for a very long time. And now we're driving up. We don't have enough, and we're driving up the prices of that. Now, I don't know what's in the discussion in the boardrooms for NGC and others. I don't know what's in that discussion. I don't know what they're thinking. Maybe it's a demand and supply thing, and they're saying, well, look, the supply is limited. We still have all these companies here, so they're going to pay more for it because the supply is limited. No, because you could pack up and go, as the manufacturing piece of Unilever has done, as Kimberly-Clark has done, as Johnson & Johnson has done, as Mittal has done. There's a very long list of companies who have just said, you know what? This makes no sense. But we jamming still. So my prediction, and I don't like saying these things, but I think it's the reality, or my prediction is that this thing is going to get worse. More companies are going to look at the model and they're going to say, you know what? Given the price of energy in Trinidad and Tobago, given unsafe or unstable political and geopolitical realities in the Caribbean, here might be the best place to be located. Then what automatically follows? Well, I can tell you what follows. They shut their doors. They may bring the products in from elsewhere, but people go home. So think about people who work in manufacturing facilities and warehouses and the salespeople and all these people. Immediately you can see the downstream effect. And I don't know who's making these decisions. Now, is the price of gas too low? Maybe it is, in terms of what we sell it to the companies for. Maybe it is too low, I don't know. But as I said under the last administration, when they said they wanted to do this property tax and they came in with these high figures, and high is relative to what it was, I said then, one, systems are not ready for it. Two, you have to give the economy time to adjust. You can't just come in and do it. They did it. And then they had to now backtrack. Somebody must have heard me, or they must hear all the cussing and say, oi, we had a backtrack. So we give them more time to pay and we lower the figures. Right? And those of us who paid early, well, of course, we ain't get back with money despite what our current minister has said. But what are we going to do? We're jamming still, right? That's our reality. And so when you jump 70%, a 3, 4, 5% jump, we can countenance and we give the economy time to adjust. But that's not what's happening here. And so I'm interested to know when, not if, but when more and more of our companies, or manufacturing companies in particular, because that's the second earner. That's the other thing we have to think about. They are a second earner for foreign exchange. When they decide, you know what, this is not making sense for us, what happens then? Because we've just lost, we will lose when that decision becomes active, our political advantage. sorry, not our political advantage. Politics is in my head. We've just lost our economic advantage as a nation. And so what we are actually doing is we are cutting off one of the legs on the stool. Remember, there were three legs. It was natural endowments, macro policies, micro policies, right? So the micro environment is the people and firms. The macro environment is the rule of law, healthcare, education, human development. And then natural endowments is the other stool. We keep cutting at that one, natural endowments. I don't know how we're going to figure this out as a nation. And maybe what we need to do is get someone from the Ministry of Finance and the Ministry of Energy to come in and talk with us. Maybe we need to find somebody. Maybe the minister will be willing to talk to us and explain to us what is going on. We'd love to know, you know. I would love to know. And I would be the first to say, oh, I didn't understand. Now I understand. But I don't get it. I don't understand. How is this thing going to work? So, and I want to hear from you. We're going to invite you to call into 625-2257, 627-3223 and 306-1065. Right, so we're going to invite you to call into us. But the question becomes, and people have been, as I talk to people, are saying, well, what do we do? Well, I say, here's one. Don't depend on a government job. I think we have a call. All right, caller, are you there?
Yes, good evening.
Very good afternoon to you, Mr. Pinal.
Yeah, well, I'm listening, but, you know, thanks for rehashing what has been in the air for some time, because people don't want to believe it, eh?
Uh-huh, talk to me.
They want to believe that we're going to be able to continue the way we have been going,
mm-hmm.
and that somehow the price of oil and gas will go up, and we'll find a lot of it. It's right under our nose somewhere. We'll mm-hmm. just find it. People want to believe that, because it has happened for so long. That they think that's going to happen again. They are not in tune with what the reality that the oil has essentially faded down to quite low, and the gas is deeper and more expensive to produce, right, yeah. and therefore you have to charge more, okay. and you may not even get the investment.
So, Mr. Pinal, let me interact with you a little bit. Are you suggesting that the charging more is the charging more that we are likely to see, according to what the NGC is saying, is related to the fact that the molecules are deeper in the ground and it's costing more to produce?
Well, we know it's costing more to produce. The exact relationship between what they are charging,
mm-hmm.
what they want to charge, and what it's costing to produce, I would know. But mm-hmm. it's costing more to produce,
fair.
And they intend to charge more. Without the actual figures, I don't know if it's a fair increase.
Well, but before you go on, Mr. Pinal, here's what I would say. I assume I have been around businesses and run businesses for a very long time. And generally, we don't jump by double-digit increases. That is not done.
Were you in the gas industry?
No, I wasn't in the gas industry. So tell me if I'm missing something.
Well, I was about to say that my family was in business too.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. Well, obviously, you're not a young man.
I take it as a compliment, but go
yes.
on.
Yes. yeah, I'm saying that in context.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My parents used to make clothes.
Right.
They had a factory, and they used to make this accordion pleat skirt.
Mm-hmm. I'm familiar.
And there was a guy who used to do it. They used to cut the cloth here, and we used to drop it. And then pick it up back. And all of that, we could absorb that cost. And you're getting your price,
mm-hmm.
right? And then he jacked up the price.
Right.
And we abandoned that line.
Mm-hmm.
Because my mother, who was really the manager and the brain behind it all.
Right.
She felt, well, if he jacks up the price, I will have to jack up. And I wouldn't sell enough. And then I'll just be scurrying back and forth to sell a little bit.
Right.
So I'll just leave that alone. So if the cost of producing your goods for your customer goes up in such a way that you have to charge so much, you're going to sell less
mm-hmm.
because they may get it elsewhere, because somebody else had the machine and they would probably continue charging themselves what they were charging before. You know, the cost factor would be the same for them.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy wanted to make more profit because he noticed
his
orders were going up.
Yeah.
So she decided, listen, I don't need this headache. We could just make more of other things.
Yeah, fair enough.
So I'm saying that's the way I know business.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I learned it. And I was one of the salesmen, and I always brought feedback. Now, the stores would give me feedback, and I would bring it directly to my parents. I was young, 20,
right.
21 and
right,
whatnot.
Right, right.
And they would make the adjustments. Sometimes my mother would make the time to go and talk to the people yeah. because
but,
they
but,
were
but
experienced.
Mr. Peter, let me make an interjection. I'm sorry to cut
yeah.
you off, but I understand what you're saying. And so now here you have a business entity with a range of products all within the same family. So you're selling apparel. Okay, fine. So you have these skirts and you have jeans or whatever it is, different things. And you can make that kind of a pivot. But let us understand the major difference with a company like the NGC. A major difference, like a company like the NGC, and Mr. Pinal, thanks for your comment, is a major difference. This is a gas company. Very, very different. And it is at the national level. When you are at the individual level or the family level, micro enterprise or small enterprise, whatever it is, you can pivot. You can take your capital and pivot differently. You move from one type of business to another, or you're bringing a different line. But the Trinidad and Tobago has earned much of its foreign exchange from where? From gas in the last multitude of years. And so the activities and the actions of the NGC will have a national impact, will have an impact on our competitiveness. That's the point I am making. I am making that point, and I'm saying I have seen nothing, and I don't know where this has come from. I want to assume that the people who run this company are not crazy, right? So I have seen nothing that suggests that a 70% sudden increase is warranted in one fell swoop. We are doing this repeatedly across the economy. And when you shock the economy, what do you think will happen? Well, I'll tell you one of the things that happen. At the personal level and the micro level, people spend less. Stay with me now. Go ask the FET promoters. And I don't care whether you're FET or not. I stopped FETing many years now. But go ask the FET promoters and the people who do those things, how they have downsized and changed the structure of these events. Yeah? Because people's pockets are impacted. People are spending differently. So when a roll-on, roll-off car dealer would get a D-plate at $5,000 and the minister decides, we go double it. Suddenly, you're shocking the economy. Now, you could tell me, maybe, that the price should be $5,000. Yeah, but give us time to adjust. Yeah? So if we're using the same model and they say 7, and this has not happened yet, this only came out in the news, I think, in the last 24 hours or so, right? But 70% increase. What then happens to the producers? Because when I go to St. Lucia, St. Vincent, Grenada, Antigua, Barbados, Jamaica, I see Trinidad and Tobago products across all these places, you know. They are manufactured here, and we have a competitive advantage because of the cheap energy. So when we pass on a 70% hike to the users of the gas, my question is, well, then what happens to those companies? And how does it impact their competitiveness and thereby the competitiveness of Trinidad and Tobago? And I'm only asking questions. Does it then mean that some companies are going to have to downsize and go one step further? Will some have to go out of business? And I am not saying we shouldn't increase, because like Mr. Pinal, I don't have the figures in front of me. And I don't know what it costs to pull gas and out of the ground and process it and so on. I don't know. But what I know is when you shock the system in this way, the economy doesn't usually react. Plus, let's add to this, as before we take the call, let's add, keep in mind that we have war in the air. In the air. We have war and international skirmishes in the air. Caller, are you there? Yeah, go ahead, caller.
Pleasant afternoon, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how you explain this system here?
Yeah.
And how they come and they put on that shockwave?
Uh-huh.
You see that shockwave?
Yes, tell me.
They're going and cripple the economy drastically. Because, let me tell you, my friend was a technocrat.
Right.
Like he was in the energy sector, right? I Mr. Lee Kwai.
Okay.
Right. And you see what, how you explain that there? Right now, expect hiking in like electricity and all these things. Because you see, remember the energy by 70%.
Yeah.
You understand? And Piantech alone.
Right.
Going to consume. You remember these things is large consumers
of
and
course.
Energy. Yeah?
Of course. Now, to be fair, the NGC has not put out an official statement. I have not seen an official statement, and we also don't know who is going to be affected. As far as I know, the TNTEC has already been given the green light to raise prices, raise rates. They've already been given the green light.
Yeah.
That happened, what, last year or year before? They've already gotten the green light because there were all these public consultations and so on, and
right.
The Regulated Industries Commission has already given them the green light. But you're not wrong. I don't know who is going to be impacted most by this supposed 70%, because they said across the board.
You see, this will be like the larger energy consumers.
Right.
You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, they consume an X amount. So we need to sit down and get men like you,
mm-hmm.
and a few others, who like men who did structure over petrol train.
Mm.
Because it takes years and months and weeks and sleepless. Because my friend was one.
Right.
Mr. Likwa, you understand? And they struck it over to build this country. You know?
Well, here's the thing. Thank you, caller, for your, thanks for the call. Here's the thing, caller and listeners, here's the problem. I think one of the problems we have as a nation, and I've seen this over and over, and this is not specific to any one administration, and that is that some administrations put themselves in an echo chamber. That's what I get. I get the sense. And let me tell you how an echo chamber works. Think about going in a barrel, put a cover over it, and talk to yourself. And that sound reverberates within that chamber, and you keep hearing your own voice. And the more you hear your own voices, the more you believe yourself. I don't know that politicians, the people we've elected, have a habit of bringing in devil's advocates, have a habit of bringing in other voices. Now, I would think you would want advisors who would bring in the other perspective. And I'm saying that to say that people like me don't get into those echo chambers, because I very regularly will say things like, yeah, but what about, you know, yeah, but I hear you, but what about this? When you do this, if you increase, let's assume, gas supply to these manufacturing firms by 70%, what percentage of their expenses for the year is gas? And how are they going to mop that up? Where's that money go? Because money doesn't come out of thin air, you know. You know, we don't have a tree in the back next to the tamarind tree or next to the mango tree that you could just go and shake down, you know. Right? So What we're saying now is consumers and those who buy from us, whether they be consumers, whether they be customers, they are the ones who have to pay the price. But are they willing? So if you make something like nuts, I just using nuts, or soft drinks, well, do we have to buy the soft drinks from this place? Or is it better to import it somewhere else? And that question will now be repeated up the islands and across the world. Obviously, because nobody gets into business to lose money. And so for me, if we as an organization or as a nation say, look, we need more for our gas, well, what's happening on the broader market? And how are we going to ratchet that up over time if there is a strategy around that? Yeah? Right? So remind you of the WhatsApp number in particular, 306-1065. We're going to have a break shortly. And we want to hear from you when we come back, because we have to talk about this issue of competitiveness and where we're heading as a nation. I'm not sure myself. I'm in question and I want to know. I want you to tell me.
Power up your Saturdays with Carrie V's electrifying energy on Speak Your Mind Saturdays. Here, you're not just tuning in, you're transforming the show into a vibrant tapestry of opinions, laughter, and spirited debates. Get set for a day packed with the fun, the burning issues, and Carrie V's infectious personality. Join the fun, fuel the conversation, speak your mind. Saturdays with Carrie V on Freedom 106.5 FM. Every weekday morning, Tusker Martinez brings you the stories that matter to you. On the Human Impact, tackling the issues of the day, exploring health and wellness that hits home, diving into powerful features, bold opinions, and a book club that keeps you thinking. It's thoughtful, it's fearless, and it's yours. Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 12 noon on Freedom 106.5 FM.
Speak your mind, Trinidad and Tobago, and let's make it count. The Human Impact, only on Freedom 106.5 FM.
Tune in to Betterments with Old Space. Monday through Thursday, 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. for a program that educates and is solution-based. Base tackles the issues that matter to you, providing a platform to speak your mind and find solutions. That's Betterments with Base. With a focus on education and resolution, this is all about making things better for you. You can reach us via phone and WhatsApp to share your thoughts and find solutions to the issues that matter to you. So if you want to make a difference and have your voice heard, tune in to Freedom 106.5 FM and join us for Betterments with Base Monday through Thursday from 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. Better for you. Only on Freedom 106.5 FM, where we believe that your voice matters.
All right, folks, we're back. I want to remind you, I am going to be here having these conversations every Wednesday, 6 to 7. This is Richard Solomon, by the way, Inside Hub. Richard Solomon, every Wednesday, you can interact with me, 625-2257 and 627-3223. And we have a caller by magic. Caller, you're there?
Yes, good afternoon, sir.
Tell me, good afternoon to you.
We'll try to be brief, I hope so.
All right.
Listen, you ever trying to solve a problem and there's a serious unknown factor?
Yes, we try to make the known unknowns known, but talk to me.
All right, I think in this situation, in terms of NGC raising the gas by 70%, 70%, that is unheard of. But what we could do is to believe that they're not stupid.
Go on.
There's one thing. They're not business stupid.
Okay.
So we have to assume that they have a reason for making that apparently ridiculous kind of assertion that automatically you could see it will crash the general economy. But they're not stupid. We have our next situation where the energy minister just ups and head into India, you understand, and not wanting to attend the local energy conference.
Right.
They're not stupid. You understand? So they're essentially, in my mind, there's an unseen hand, there's an unseen factor that driving this towards some kind of end that they alone know of and that we are not aware of what the factors are. So before, we could guess. But we had to find out from NGC, and that shouldn't be a national secret. The freedom of information should be able to help us in terms of finding out from the annual report what the price of production.
Right.
And if that would warrant things. But we have people like Mr. Pina, who will try and explain that without much information. Completed schools and that kind of thing. He's a man that really put children in front of a class because they're taller. And not for a specific reason, but they're of that nature.
So Kola, basically what you're saying is we need to get more data to explain what's going on here. I'm getting you okay?
Explicitly, so 100%.
All right. Let's take that angle. So first of all, now, thanks, Kola. Thanks for your call. Here's the thing. At different levels, economies and companies behave differently. And you're right. You make a really good point. If we had the time now, I could pull up the accounts of the NGC and we could pick through it and see what is there and cost of production and so on. But we could ask an easy question. Has NGC been profitable? That's an important question. Or is NGC losing money? I don't know. Because If your cost of production is so high that you're not able to turn a profit, then we could say, well, okay, maybe it's warranted. But again, here's what we all know. You can't wake up a morning. We've tried this before. It don't work out, you know. You can't wake up a morning and say 70% in the kutia. Some people know that term. Right? Carrie, don't know it.
Right.
70%, figure it out. Because that's what it seems like to me. Now, I heard you on your point of the minister is not attending the energy conference, and I know the prime minister had some very strong words to say about that. I'm not getting into that conversation. I know a little bit about how these chambers work. They generally don't make a lot of money. The reality is that they're funded by their members, and if their largest members are foreign, energy organizations, then they are going to have a say in how these chambers operate. That's just how these things work. They are usually stratified based on size, and you pay more the bigger you are. And if you pay, you have a say. There's nothing wrong with that. I take a slightly different view. I think the government recognizing that energy is our number one thing in terms of earning a foreign exchange and productivity and competitiveness needs to be get into these conversations, right? Needs to get into these conversations. Keep in mind that Trinidad and Tobago isn't a place that you could just buff up people and quarrel with them and they will just get in line. Eh? We are not that type of nation. We don't like a wide power distance. But getting back to your point, you said that the people are not stupid. I'm not accusing anybody of being stupid or crazy. There must be a plan. I want to assume that there is a plan. Yeah? And maybe there are unseen factors. I accept that. At the end of all of that, however, if you raise the price of energy that I use to produce my skirts, nuts, beer, then the cost of my product to my customer is going to go up. Or I'm going to cut into my profit margins. And we don't really like to cut into profit margins, you see. So regardless of what is the reason, maybe there are good reasons, I don't know. And maybe there is an unseen factor. But the fact is, if I run a business and I look at this and I realize, hey, this thing is going to cost me so much more and therefore it's going to cut into my green and I might end up in the red, then what organizations do is they start to adjust. Because let me tell you what they can't do. The beer producers and the nuts producers and all the soft drink producers and so on cannot just go to the customers and pass on this simply, you know. Remember, there are substitutes out there. If I buy a beer, I'm not a beer drinker, but let's just say I were a beer drinker, don't I have options? I have options. I could buy beer made here in Trinidad and Tobago, but I could buy beer from other places. And what that does is that it creates now space in the market. Because believe you me, when you are number one, number two, number three in a market, and you start to slip and struggle, other people from elsewhere are looking at you and they want to eat your lunch. Let me remind you on the WhatsApp 306-1065, so you could interact with us there. On the phone line 625-2257, 6273-223. Come out to us. This is Richard Solomon, and we're going to be here every Wednesday, 6 to 7. We're going to talk about these issues. The truth is that I believe, this is my belief, we are reducing the competitiveness of Trinidad and Tobago continually. We are now impacting a particular pillar that we've had, relatively cheap energy. And I'm not saying it shouldn't be more expensive, but what is the plan to get us there? For me, the plan should not be suddenly 70% in the tail. For me, it shouldn't be that. Because I don't know how these manufacturing companies can absorb that. I do not know. I don't know how, and in preparing for today, one of the things I read is that some of the companies that have left Trinidad and Tobago have said that we have a volatile energy sector. In other words, they can't rely. In other words, they're saying we can't be sure that we will get the amount of gas that we need to run our plants. Remember earlier I said if you build a multi-billion dollar plant, $100 million, whatever it is, and you can't get gas to run it, then you have an asset that is either underperforming or not performing at all. And that's a reality for many of the organizations in Trinidad and Tobago. And then if you pump that price up further, then I don't know what is the shock that you send through the system or the degree of the shock. Yeah? Now, there is a silver lining here. Because we're talking competitiveness, and I said there were three levels. Natural endowments, macro policies, rule of law, healthcare, people development, and so on. And lastly, micro policies and microsystems. At the micro level, we absolutely can do something. Like what? Well, I'm supposed to be here and start a show at 6 o'clock. I don't get here at 2 minutes to 6 and rush in and, hey, there we are. No. I get in early. because I'm here to, you get what, you see where I'm going with this? So at the micro level, if you run a business, you've got a job, it's important that you do what you're supposed to do. That's a big part of our competitiveness. If you run an institution in the country, then it's your job to make sure that institution is profitable, that it's efficient, that it's effective, it's doing what it's supposed to do. Remember, this thing operates at three levels. And if you sit on a board, or you are the CEO or one of these C-suite people in a large firm and so on for Trinidad and Tobago, one of these bigger companies, you know, because about 250,000 people work for big companies. More than 50 people working in those firms. So about 250,000 people working there. About 200,000 people working in small and micro enterprises. People forget that. Small 1, 2, and 5 people organizations under 50. Small, medium, and micro enterprises employ about 200,000 people. Our labor force only has about 550,000. So they're important. But if you run an organization, you have to make it efficient and effective. All right? And I can't help but talk to the public service here. Public service, supervisors, managers, employees in the public service, I shouldn't be having 3 and 4 discussions about the same thing. It shouldn't take me so long. I can, if I go to the Cayman Islands, I could register a company in two to four days, I believe. And if I want to rush it, it's 4 hours. I could rush it. There's a rush fee, and I could get it done in 4 hours. Yeah? And if I wanted to register an LLC in many parts of the United States, it's done in hours. Hours. I don't even have to go. I could sit right here behind my computer at this desk here and get that done. But when we go down to legal affairs, that's a different story. And if, you know, if you all say, but Richard just said that last week, yeah, because it didn't fix yet. I'm saying we are undercutting our own competitiveness. One of the reasons it's undercut is not just the price of gas. That's one issue. But also the quality of work that we do. It takes too long to get things done. We have a problem with the ease of doing business. And like competitiveness, we sit in the middle of nations. When you measure nations, we are about in the middle. And that has everything to do with labor productivity. That has everything to do with work ethic. And the challenge with work ethic. And so, saying to people that they must come to work for 8 and so on is not enough. I also want to add here, doubling and tripling fines for errant drivers is not enough. Because laws don't change behavior. You have to police the laws, one, but there's a deeper piece of work to be done. The individuals of this nation have to take it upon themselves. And if you are supervising, if someone is reporting to you, again, you have to hold them accountable for their work. So while I am quickly going to say that those who run large organizations sit on boards and places like the NGC and so on have their own work to do, and the minister and his people, they have their own work to do at the Ministry of Finance and other ministries, absolutely. But we as individuals have to take some responsibility for this. One of the things I say as I work locally is oil and gas not so sexy no more, you know. There was a time if you find that you're good to go, you're good, but it's not that simple anymore. And so if we are still waiting, and if we are not doing what we need to do, I believe Trinidad and Tobago is in for a very rough ride. I believe economically we are in for a very rough ride. And if you are saying, well, Richard, well, what do we do? At a personal level, let me tell you what I've told my children and people around me. One, learn skills that you can sell. Two, do not see Trinidad and Tobago as your only market, because the world is a big place. You, many of us, are now able to earn foreign exchange. Find ways so that you can sell your skills beyond the borders of Trinidad and Tobago. I'm not necessarily saying that you have to leave Trinidad and Tobago, because everybody can't leave. That's not practical. Yeah? But seek to do that. Seek to find ways that you can earn beyond just the borders of Trinidad and Tobago. The other thing that you have to do is be very smart with your money. So if you run a business, you have a little, people talk, call it a side hustle, whatever it is, be efficient, be effective, be smart with your money. Because as a nation, we require at all levels people to be focused and to contribute to the national competitiveness.
Good evening. Let me disagree with you that laws don't change behavior. You see all these people rushing to licensing office and all these garages? They are avoiding fees for laws that were already on the books. So all that they did was modify the penalty aspect of the law. So let's call it a new law. Laws change behavior. All these people have a different behavior now.
Yeah, the question
they
about...
They have decided to obey the law.
Right.
You know, but sociologists and psychologists and all these people with their various degrees, you know, they like to be useful. But if the penalty is high enough people will start obeying the law. And that will cause a change in behavior in the society. Yeah, man. Thanks.
And that's, that point is not lost on me, but here's what I'm saying. If you make a mad rush, so you change the law, you add penalties, because I believe anybody who has worked with me will tell you we need consequences. I am all for that. There must be consequences to behavior. So if you are supposed to do something and you don't do it, there should be a consequence for that, right? And that's at all levels of the society, so I'm all for that. But here's the challenge. We have a kind of hot and sweaty mentality in this country, right? We make a mad rush. This happened just around COVID time. You all remember? WASA said they were going to disconnect people, and people rushed out, and the lines were sneaking around buildings and so on to pay their bills. What is happening with that now? So I'm saying the laws by themselves or the increased penalties by themselves are not enough to change behavior. There must be a consistent policing of those penalties to ensure that people do what they have to do. Now, having said so, I think we did this thing way too suddenly. And taking this approach that says, well, Trinidad and Tobago is a lawless place and we must just fine people, again, we are shocking these systems economically. So increase the fines if you want. I think 100% is way too much. I've said this before, and I don't want to beat this to death again. But if you don't continue to hold people accountable over the long term, the behavioral change that you are speaking to, caller, will not stick. Will not stick. I'm not asking. I am telling you. As I work with organizations, this is something that we've seen. So somebody comes in as a new supervisor, new sheriff in town. So you're trying to hold people accountable. But you get transferred to another place. And the supervisor that follows you, they're kind of lackadaisical. They allow things to slip and so on. What happens? People go back to the path of least resistance. So I'm not saying we must beat people with a broomstick and be all over people's heads and so on. Yes, we have to hold people accountable for their behavior, but we have to do so consistently. It cannot be that the police decide, okay, you see, today's a day of total policing. It can't be that. It can't be that licensing wakes up a morning and say, you see, today we're going out. No, we have laws on the books, just like we have taxes on the books. We don't need new taxes. We need to collect the money that is there now, right? We need to collect the money that is there now. That is the reality. Mm-hmm. Callers, you're there? Caller, you're there?
Yeah, pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, what happened there? Even so, did they triple the penalties and didn't enforce it on it? It would have gone normal, right? But they come down now and they enforce on the law. They start to hold roadblocks and start to check on everything. The enforcement on the law. Because all the time, the law was there. But enforcing it and consistent that you're enforcing it and use it. Things need to be done.
All right. So, Kola, are we agreeing there? And that's the point I'm making. You have to hold people accountable. You have to enforce the law. There's no point in having laws. So just raising the prices is not going to be enough. You have to, and it can't just be today. This has to be an ongoing thing. And we have to be fair with it as well. Eh? I think we have a voice note.
Richard, you see what you're saying there?
Tell me.
And that caller, Dubasa Trees, what is penal? See, disagree with you on that level. It was the other administration, he'd agree with you.
Yeah,
because all what he talked about there, the other administration, he was brutal with the penalty too high and whatnot, and you'll drain people's pocket and whatnot. But because it's his leader, he agreed with that. Trust me.
So caller and those who calling and so on, you're not going to find a lot of traction with me on the comparing one administration to the next. I am not going to go down that road, and let me tell you why. I have praised and I have criticized all administrations that we have had over the years. I am for that. I want to be an equal opportunity pounder, you know, so we could pound them. Well, I equal when it comes to that. If you do something that I can see is positive and it makes sense and it's cogent and it's strategic and so on and it's moving us in the right direction, even if it's hard, I will praise that. And if you do the opposite, I will let you know. So I am not going to go down the road that you are going down to say, well, when it was this one and it's this leader and so on. Let me tell you something. The people of Trinidad and Tobago have spent money to get me educated, to be able to look at things in a dispassionate and objective way. Right? So I hear you on the point, because people flip-flop their positions. And I think that is very weak, by the way. Let me just say that. I think that's very weak. Now, having said so, sometimes we get information, and having gotten new information, we change our positions. But I don't change my position depending on the color that happens to be flying these days. I'm sorry, I'm not doing that. Bring data, bring facts, bring objective analysis. And having brought that, we can have a discussion about those realities, because I said it last week and I'm going to say it again. Mother Nature and the ground under us doesn't care who wins the election. You have to keep that in mind. So whether it is his leader or my leader, this one leader, let me tell you something. None of that is going to, it's not going to amount to a hill of beans. Let's be real. Let's be real about what that means. No, people should have something within themselves to be able to hold a position and do so objectively. But I'll tell you, it doesn't matter whether it is one party versus the other. The price of oil that we take on the outside of the outside there, that remains. Yes, our realities of the molecules being deeper in the ground, that remains. The fact that these fines have been doubled and tripled in some cases and whatever, I think they are too sudden. I said the same thing when the last administration did the same. And they tripled certain things and they increased certain fines or certain taxes. I said the same. It was too sudden. We have to give the economy time to adjust. Give people time to adjust. Even where the Prime Minister came out and made a statement, and of course it has been backed up by others and so on, indicated by others, where they've said, well, look, if you have certain kinds of problems with your vehicle, we'll give you 3 days or 4 days or a week to fix it. But some of those things make absolutely no sense. I will say it here. Because if I have a blown, I don't know, some one of these fancy parts in the car, and I can't find the part to fix it in that time, you're going to give me a ticket? But I park the car up home, so it's no longer a risk to anyone on the road. We have to think these things through. Some things take longer. You see my vehicle smoking, and you say, well, there's too much excess emissions, so I'm going to give you a warning. Go and get it fixed. Well, maybe I need an engine job or a ring job or something. I'm not a mechanic, so I don't know. People talk about these things. But that is not, I had to get a man to sort me out, and he said, well, check me in 2 weeks now, boy, because I can't sort out that now. Look at how much cars I have here. What do I then do? You ticket me? Because some of these things don't make sense. So I'm agreeing people's cars and so on should be roadworthy. I for that. I'm all for that. But we also have to be mindful, and these things have to make sense. But my criticism has nothing to do with who is in power, you know. I don't care. You can bring somebody from Mars and vote for them and put them in. If I see them doing something that doesn't make sense, I will say, don't make sense. And you know what I would like? Callers, I want more people like that. Because you know what that will do? That will cause us to be less reverent of party, less reverent of color, less reverent of red versus yellow, and more reverent of red, black, and white. And that's where we need to be as a nation. Richard Solomon, folks, join me next Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m.
You're tuned into the all-new Freedom 106.5.
106.5.